You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Oh, my, the jokes on Capitol Hill this week. Eric in Wonderland went to a tea party and the Mad Bratter showed up. Or Eric Cantor got an incomplete from Professor David Bratt and will have to go to summer school rather than be majority leader anymore. I like this one. Eric, the little engine that can't. Or just what the House of Representatives needs right now, another brat. The announcement that House Majority Leader Eric Cantor will step down from his leadership position by the end of July after his defeat in Tuesday's Republican primary by unknown college professor David Bratt. It's a major upset for the Richmond congressman who was rumored to have his eye on the House speakership. Now I suppose he has his eye on some lobbying job on K Street. Who knows? Joining us to discuss the scramble on Capitol Hill, though, is Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick. A lot of noise up there this week.
Yeah, John, it's been absolute chaos, especially yesterday in the House Republican Conference, because nobody expected this. And now the race is on to replace Eric Cantor and to replace a lot of the leadership. Look, a lot of this is nothing new. It's really interesting as you talk to conservatives going into an emergency meeting yesterday. You know, the loss of Eric Cantor in his primary seems to have sped up a lot of things. But listen to Mo Brooks. He's a conservative from Alabama, and he wanted me to know when we were talking that they were going to make this change. Anyway, it's just that Eric Cantor's loss has made things go a lot faster. Listen.
We were going to force some change in leadership that would better reflect the will of the American people, Main Street people who are concerned, who are struggling, and who don't like the idea of promoting laws that in turn promote the interests of illegal aliens over American citizens and lawful immigrants.
I don't know, Todd. 62% of Americans support a path to citizenship, and he's basing the will of the American people on 36,000 people who voted in the Richmond primary?
Well, here's one problem, aside from policy, that Mo Brooks and people like Mo Brooks have with the leadership. When you look at the Republican leadership now, look who's in it. John Boehner, Ohio. Kevin McCarthy, California. Eric Cantor, Virginia. Kathy McMorris Rodgers, Washington State. All blue or purple states. No red states for a House conservative Republican conference. So here's part of what's going to happen over this next week. And there is going to be a leadership election next Thursday. The House Majority Whip right now, Kevin McCarthy of California, he's running for it, and he already has a whip operation of allies who yesterday started going around colleagues whipping up votes for McCarthy. Now, McCarthy's going to have a challenge, and for conservatives like Mo Brooks and others who want a Southerner or a red stater at the upper echelons of leadership, they're going to like the other candidate, Pete Sessions from Texas. He's chairman of the Rules Committee. He doesn't have as many allies as somebody like Kevin McCarthy does, but a lot of people want a red stater at the top of the leadership. Now, if McCarthy wins, and it looks like now he probably would, there's going to open up a vacuum beneath him. A lot of people want to run for that whip position, you know, that Francis Underwood position for people who like House of Cards. Right. One guy to watch if you're actually going to look at this is a fellow named Steve Scalise. He hasn't been in Congress that long, but people like him. He's from Louisiana, so he's checking all the boxes. Southerner, red stater, conservative, lots of cred. If McCarthy wins that majority leader race, Scalise may well move in right behind him to be the new whip.
Is this about brand adjustment for the GOP generally, or is it the ascension of the Tea Party into the leadership, and now it's going to be more divided than ever?
A lot of those conservatives, John, have felt like even though the leadership talks a conservative game, that when it really came down to it, they really haven't been listened to. Eric Cantor voted to open the government back up after a deal was struck. Eric Cantor favored something like the DREAM Act. Conservatives say, yeah, they talk conservative, but when it really came to the tough issues and the tough votes, we need some of our own in leadership, and that's what they're after.
Debt ceiling redux, Todd?
Well, that debate is over for at least another year and a half, but who knows where this is going to go. At least it gets us to 2016.
Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, thanks so much.
You bet.
So chaos on Capitol Hill, but what do Republicans really have to say about losing their House Majority Leader? Does the changing of the guard mark a turning point for the GOP, or just a one-off event that no one saw coming? Tea Party Victor David Bratt might disagree with the latter, but joining us now to weigh in is Ruben Navarette, syndicated Washington Post columnist and CNN contributor. Ruben, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
So it seems to me that these primary races allow people to extrapolate a lot of big things about the electorate that are really not appropriate. What do you think?
I think that's right. I think that within a short time after it was announced that Eric Cantor had lost his race, I was getting emails from folks on the far right of the immigration debate saying, well, he lost because he was too soft on immigration. I got emails the next second from folks on the left saying he lost because he was too hard on immigration. And so I think people will use the circumstance to advance whatever agenda they can, but we don't really know what cost Eric Cantor the race, other than the sense that he had grown into a national figure and grown away from the folks in Virginia. It's the basic rookie mistake that politicians make. He spent too much time in Washington, too little time in his district.
And now there's this sort of terror at work within the GOP that everybody's got to appeal to the Republican base, and all of a sudden we're back into exactly the same formula that in 2012 produced the fiasco that really put the GOP out of touch with the growing demographics in the United States. I mean, that's my theory, but what do you think?
I think that's right, and I also think that it tells you about the conundrum that the GOP faces. I hear all the time, and listening to lots of conservative talk radio during the day, that it's a mistake to put out people like Eric Cantor who want to reach out to groups that typically don't reach vote Republican, that the winning formula from the far right wing's point of view is to just be a true conservative and a good, solid conservative Republican. The problem with that, as you say, demographics don't lie, and you have more and more people out there who the Republican Party will be pushing aside, and they'll lose more elections. It's a really tough spot to be in when you think about it, right? I mean, it's between a rock and a hard place. They can't keep doing things the way they've been doing because they're losing elections. But when they try to do something new, the base revolts.
And, you know, some of the interesting characters who come in as a result, people like Rand Paul, while they definitely are fresh voices, they just don't necessarily qualify as national figures who can be uniters. So you've got a cadre of candidates like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul who certainly represent this Republican base, but can't necessarily bridge the divide like, you know, a Bill Clinton to win a national election. And then, you know, you've got other problems with just the fact that the brand of the Republican Party seems more and more radical and determined by people like Laura Ingraham, who basically got David Brad elected.
The most formidable Republican out there, despite his last name, is Jeb Bush. And he is someone who brings together the corporate interests in the Republican Party and also reaches out to Hispanics and non-traditional voters. It's really a trick for people like you mentioned Cruz and Paul and the others. They've got to first be popular at home, and those folks are. Then they've got to be a national player in Washington, as Cantor was. But the third step is really important. How do I take Ted Cruz and sell him in Phoenix, in San Antonio, in Los Angeles, to those voters out there who are going to react very negatively to his hard line on immigration? And I've known Ted for 10 years. I consider him a good friend, but I don't think he's right on immigration, and I think this is really the problem that Republicans end up in. It's really difficult to be all things to all people. How do you become a national figure, speaks to the Tea Party, and also sells to those audiences that typically don't vote Republican? It's almost impossible.
Well, the argument you're making is why there have been so many governors who have made it as candidates, because they don't have to go through this Republican and Democratic primary hazing in the Congress that really creates this sense of radicalism and supports the fringe candidates. Anybody sort of bridge building on the way up?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of strong folks in the field. I think that Scott Walker, Wisconsin, and others, like I mentioned, Jeb Bush, a former governor in Florida. You're right about governors, both for Democrats and Republicans. Look at Bill Clinton, a successful politician, governor of Arkansas. I think if you're a governor, whether you be a Democrat or Republican, you start with one leg up because you avoid that one place on the map that really twists things into pretzels, and that's Washington, D.C.
Ruben Navarette is a syndicated Washington Post columnist and CNN contributor. Ruben, thanks so much. We'll check in with you again.
Thank you.